It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatment to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
And that'll do it for the Astros on this Monday night. So the first night they wear the City Connect 2.0 uniforms, they manage just three hits offensively, drop the opener of this three-game series, 7-2. The Giants improve to 3-1 on the season. The Astros even up at two games apiece.
Six-point game. Here comes Van Vliet. And good if it goes. It's over. The Lakers have won. And they go to 46-29. They've won 3 of 4.
All right, there you go. Kevin Harlan on the call on that, the latter of the two final calls. Todd Callis on the call on the former. Not as fun today to come in and talk about the local teams as it was on Monday morning when you got the Cougs going to the Final Four, you got the Rockets running the Suns off of the floor, and you got the Astros going 2-1 against the Mets over the weekend. This was not quite as much fun. 7-2, the Astros lose last night. And the Rockets, they lose to the Lakers on the back end of a back-to-back. We've got a lot of stuff to get to on the show today. Brandon Scott is in for Seth Payne. Seth, a little under the weather today. Seth, get well soon. But, B, it is good to see you, my friend.
And thanks.
Let me just be clear. I don't want to mix you into the reasons why it feels a little worse to come in on Tuesday. I love doing radio with you.
Nah, man, it's great to be in here with you, man. But thanks a lot to the local teams for how they welcomed me in here,
yes,
right? Like, we're here to do a show together today, and they don't give me nearly as great a results on a Tuesday as they did for you and Seth on a Monday. I, personally, as a native Houstonian, feel a certain way about it. Don't like it.
As you should. It's good to see you, man.
Yeah, good to see you too, man. I was definitely, though, more okay with one of the losses than the other.
Well,
let's go. I was more okay with the way that the Rockets lost last night than I was the way that the Astros lost, because the Astros, albeit only four games into the season, they're starting to show us a little bit of a theme here, or it's just been a lull offensively to start the season. Not the end of the world. Sky's not falling. Not punting on the season. We don't have to overreact, but it just doesn't feel good. It's not a good watch, and it's not an encouraging thing. Whereas the Rockets lost a game in which Dorian Finney-Smith and Gabe Vincent made six threes apiece. If that's going to be the way the Lakers beat the Rockets on any given night, I'll take that.
Yeah.
But the Astros not hitting their way out of a paper bag is not good.
Well, let's start with the Rockets then. We'll start there. And, yeah, you're right. Like, I stayed up until the end of the third quarter. And I'm like, well, I'll let this thing play out. And usually with me, I go to my sons, the group text I have with my two sons, when I go to bed before a Houston sporting event is over, particularly the Rockets, because they're both huge NBA fans. And I play a little game with myself where I get up at, you know, 2:30 in the morning, hit the restroom usually once a night, and I'll take my phone. When there was a game that I missed the end of, I'm like, oh, okay, well, let's see what happened. So this is what I woke up to, this text exchange between my son James and Sammy after I said, headed to bed, try to bring home a dub, boys. I woke up to James saying, dude, F Fred Van Vliet, effing statue on defense and not doing bleep on offense. What a soft technical foul. Wow. And then Fred Van Vliet's getting a whole lot more here. Jalen should be in this game right now. Van Vliet's been really bad.
Yeah.
Fred Van Vliet was taking some on the group text. It didn't end with any texts that said, at least we got the dub.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, well, they definitely lost this game. Now I need to go see what the final score is. You watched the whole game.
Yeah, last night was not a good night for Fred Van Vliet, might be the Rockets' most important player guy. Two for 14, Sean. And the whole statue on defense part, like they were hunting the mismatch. Obviously, Fred's not a very big guy.
Right.
And so if you've got any kind of level of size out there, you're going to try to exploit that mismatch. I mean, LeBron's catching them in the post and just discarding them as soon as he gets there. And then Fred, for whatever reason, just has this green light where he can shoot any shot. Like even, you know, we talk about the Rockets in the past of shooting bad shots, not taking good shots, and then Fred Van Vliet comes in there and he's the brain of the team and now they take better shots. It's like everybody else on the team takes better shots with Fred Van Vliet out there, except for freaking Fred Van Vliet himself. And especially on a night when he can't hit anything, 2 for 14 from the field, 1 for 7 from three. Now, Jalen Green didn't necessarily have a great shooting night. Yeah. But he threatens the defense in a much different way on far more levels of the floor. And to me, it's just obviously a much more dynamic player. I'm not breaking new ground there. But Fred Van Vliet and the trust in Fred Van Vliet seemed to – it felt like it backfired last night. I definitely feel where your boys were coming from.
Yeah, it's wild, man. And it's interesting. Like, Ime has really started to go to a shorter bench in some of these games. You know, the only guys that played off the bench were Jabari, Tari, and Steven Adams. If I had told you before this game that LeBron, Luka, and Austin Reeves would combine for 16 for 39 and 3 for 14 from 3, I would have said the Rockets probably win this game by 8 to 10 points.
Yeah.
If I told you that's what they were shooting, but you're right, it was the others last night.
Right. And not only would I say they'd probably win the game, but I'd say, okay, do that again. That's why I'm coming from it from the perspective that I am today of like, hey, I don't trust them to be able to duplicate. They're going to need LeBron, and I also don't trust LeBron and Luka to be bad every night,
right,
or not so good every night. So you figure something is going to correct itself there, or that the math will math at some point. But if their formula is going to be, hey, Dorian Finney-Smith and, you know, like the Gabe Vincent, the scraps of our bench are going to be the guys, or our role players are going to be the guys to hit not six threes between them, but six threes apiece.
12 of 24, the two of them were combined.
And that you'd still only lose by six, I'll take that.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it,
I'd
for sure.
I'll take that.
That's one way to look at it. Rockets still a game and a half up on Denver. They finished the season with the Nuggets. That could come down the two seed. The right to face whoever wins the first play-in game could come down to that last game against Denver. And the Rockets play Utah later this week. They've got no more back-to-backs left, so thank God. It feels like they've played more back-to-backs this season than the last two seasons combined.
Yeah.
No back-to-backs left, but after this Utah game, they are out over their skis. Oklahoma State at home, at Golden State, at the two LA teams again. So this isn't even – they have six games left. They're going back out to the West Coast again. What a wild schedule. So the last five games of the year, home OKC, at Golden State, at the Clippers, at the Lakers, and then home against Denver. Those are all teams that are in the top six or seven, basically. Yeah, they're all teams that are in the top. Clippers are seven right now. So yeah. They're all teams that... So you're getting a preview. You are getting a look at the buffet. It's like you're getting appetizers of the... you have to pick... Like, you're going to get five different appetizers, and you're going to have to eat one of these as the main dish in the first round, probably.
Yeah, and prepare yourself for it. Like, yeah. And it's really all of the teams are in that situation, right? Like, what matchup are you hunting for the playoffs? And then even that Denver game, Sean, what's interesting about that is like, okay, so what's it going to look like? We know that it's helter-skelter right now.
Yeah.
Is it going to be different in a week or so?
Yeah.
Like is a team going to go on a run or on a skid that's going to make that game specifically for Denver and the Rockets feel different?
Yeah.
You know, like one of those teams going to rest their starters because they're already the two, the three, the four, the five, or whatever it is, you know? That's the interesting part.
And I would say, too, like the thing that I look at last night, the missed opportunities, the only two games they've lost in this recent stretch were last night and then to Denver without Jokic a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
They win those two games. And again, you know, so you're 12-2 or whatever it is over 14 games. I can't get too upset over two losses. It's just that you lost to those two specific teams. If you had beaten Denver, you're 3.5 up on them for the two seed.
Yeah.
Right now you're 1.5. If you beat the Lakers last night, then you're basically either the two or the three. You're 4.5 games up on the Lakers with 5 or 6 games to go for either team.
Yeah.
So big missed opportunities just in terms of securing your spot where you know you're going to get a home court advantage in the first round, that kind of thing. I think they're still going to get it.
Yeah.
But it's going to be tough sled. Yeah, you're going to need maybe OKC load manages that night that you go to OKC.
That's what I'm saying.
13 games up on everybody.
Yeah,
right now.
That's what I'm saying. And maybe another team load manages not because they're the one seed like OKC, but because they feel like they're either locked into the seed that they're in, or that they're going to make the playoffs, and they don't really care as much about the matchup as they do about making sure that they're healthy at the end. But I'd point out again about those two games that they lost, the missed opportunity, not just the opportunity cost that you're talking about, but the other side of the opportunity cost was that was a Jokic-less night when you had the Nuggets. Now, and also, you haven't been very good against good teams as of late. Overall, for the season, they've been very good against good teams.
That's what's wild. They were really good against good teams earlier this year.
As of late, not so much, but you lose to the Jokic-less Nuggets at home, and then you do the same thing. And then you go on the road and lose to the Lakers on a night where Luka and LeBron are not brilliant.
All right. I would say we spent the appropriate amount of time on the right game. The Rockets game was a much more watchable game than the Astros and their 469 OPS through four games.
Sean, they've got, to my count now, they've got three extra base hits over four games. They've got the Pena home run, the Yordan double from a few days ago, and then I think Isak Paredes had a double last night. He hit one off the wall.
He did. He did. Late in the game, eighth inning.
And pretty much too little too late at that point.
Yeah.
And then they ended up getting it right back in the ninth inning. The Giants did. The two runs that Isak Paredes knocks in, they ended up getting those
off of Montero.
Off of Montero, right? So it's
still
like,
useless, by the way.
Yeah, man. It's just it is not. Again, sky not falling. I still think the Astros are going to be good. Not necessarily World Series good, but really, really good. But this is not a good feeling through the first four.
Well, again, similar to what you said about the Rockets, if you had told me, and their record is such and such, like if you told me they're going to have a 469 OPS through the first four games, and they're 2-2, they were 0-4 this time last year. So, you know, but of course, Ronel Blanco is then pitching a no-hitter in the first win of the season. That was not a no-hitter last night. He wasn't awful last night. I have a feeling that this is what Ronel Blanco is going to settle into, though. It felt like he was pitching over his head a lot of time last year, and he saw some kind of holes in his game in the second half. The thing Ronel Blanco cannot afford to do, because he's not Hunter Brown, he's not Framber Valdez, he's not Spencer Arrighetti as far as his stuff goes. He cannot afford to, when you pick a guy off, throw behind the base stealer to first base.
Yeah.
And then moments later, field a bunt and just uncompetitively swallow it when it's clearly spinning foul. He did that. The second run that the Giants scored last night was entirely due to Ronel Blanco brain farts out there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. It's like, man, give me a little bit better of an effort there on that bunt. It was a decent bunt, don't get me wrong, but at the same time,
spinning out. You could tell it was going to roll. Once it got on the dirt, it was going to roll off the dirt, I thought.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But also, it was the strategy, and this is more to the Ronel Blanco point.
Yeah.
It did feel like it was the strategy to small ball Ronel Blanco to death, whether it was on the base pass or actually dropping that bunt that they did. Like, they saw something in Ronel Blanco's game that they were trying to exploit in terms of being able to run on him.
Yeah.
So that's something that they're definitely going to have to watch out for.
All right, D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday. League meetings. So we got to get into the league meetings. I believe today is the day that we get the vote from the 32 NFL teams on things like the tush push, overtime rules changing, seeding in the playoffs changing, which is highly relevant to the Houston Texans historically, that the four seed might not get a home field or a home game in the playoffs necessarily as a division winner. So we're going to get into all that. We'll try to predict what the league is going to do today with some of these votes. D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. Commented on the reports of toxicity in the offensive line room. What did D'Amico have to say about that? We'll hear from the Texans head coach coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, it is Brandon Scott and Pendergast today. Brandon in for Seth. D'Amico Ryans met with the media at the league meetings in West Palm Beach yesterday. It's always fun. Coach sitting down at breakfast, just wants to have his omelet and his coffee. And he's got 12 media members gathered around him with microphones right up in his face.
Like, just try to enjoy the scenes of the beach, the sand, the water.
Yeah.
Not some crinkly old reporter with his phone coming up to him.
Bagel sandwich and some orange juice.
Yeah, man. Vibes.
Sea breeze and the vibes with a Z on it. And
how much is a media scrum a vibe killer at a scene like that?
Oh, it's the ultimate, I would say.
Come on,
right?
Man. We're not at the gym or at the facility. I'm on the beach, and here you come.
And I want to talk about toxicity in the O-line room, D'Amico. Let's hear about it. So here's D'Amico Ryans. That was the big report after the Laremy Tunsil trade. Albert Breer saying there was toxicity in the offensive line room. What does D'Amico Ryans have to say about that?
I think our guys in that room, they competed. They battled. It didn't always go how we wanted it to go, but there was nothing toxic in the room. Those guys showed up to work every day. Those guys were a tight group. They went out to dinners throughout the week. So those, I don't know where their report came from, but it's very incorrect. That's nothing in our building. That's nothing I stand for, you know, as the head coach of the team. We bring in the right people. We bring in good guys, and they're all those guys are great guys.
Okay, so a little tough to hear just because it's a media scrum, but
Wind was clearly blowing out there.
Wind was blowing. This is one of those things, Brandon, that to me, oftentimes with stuff like this, it comes down to how you define the word that is the center of
yes.
the discussion. And it comes down to, in this case, it's toxicity. How do you define toxicity? And many people define toxicity as some element that includes animosity, anger, frustration, all of those things. I don't know that it was that. Like, Laremy Tunsil seems to be at the center of this because he's the one that was shipped out. And he's like, you ship out your best guy in a position group when his skill set is one that protects the biggest asset in the organization, C.J. Stroud, and it does look strange. And we'll hear from D'Amico on the Tunsil trade in just a second. This could be one of those things where the game of telephone that gets played, whatever was going on in that room turns into toxicity, when in fact it wasn't exactly what D'Amico Ryans wanted.
Yeah, I thought from the very beginning, and this is not a shot at Albert Breer, but I thought phrasing was key all along with this whole toxicity thing. Like, when I first saw Albert Breer report the toxic phrase, that there was a toxic offensive line room. But if you go and read that report, everything he says around that word toxic falls short of toxicity. Like, hey, although he was liked, or although he was well-respected, he being Laremy Tunsil, that room became toxic, which was, to me, and again, Albert Breer is a well-respected and well-accomplished reporter, but to me, it did make me think of, okay, did Albert Breer or his editor just not word check this properly and say, hey, is this the phrasing that we want to use given everything else that we're saying around this? Is all we're really saying is that the Texans' offensive line just was bad, not good enough, substandard, didn't live up or meet the standard that they had set for themselves or for the amount of money that they were paying for said offensive line, as opposed to calling it toxic? Because that feels like a very specific kind of critique. And it feel like it also missed the mark.
Feels like someone used that word along the way and they just used it wrong.
Yeah.
And then Albert Breer ran with it. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, and a lot of us, let's just be honest, there are a lot of people, I think a lot of us here at the station included, who did not necessarily appreciate Laramie Tunsil's leadership style,
right,
his demeanor, his presentation. And I think maybe some of that in some ways was probably communicated to Albert Breer, and they took some liberties in calling it toxic, when that necessarily wasn't the way that the other players in that room felt about him, as much as maybe others outside felt about him watching him and that unit not succeed.
Yeah, it matters less now that they've dismantled that room and started to build it back up again.
Yeah.
It would make a much bigger difference if all the guys that were part of that room were still Houston Texans.
Yeah.
You know, if you're throwing toxicity, then they're getting asked about it now, yeah, that kind of thing.
And it's also, to that point, it's also an easy word to use when you get rid of not just one, but three of the starters on the offensive line, including the best one, yeah, in Laramie Tunsil.
Yep. Here's D'Amico Ryan, speaking of Tunsil. Here's D'Amico Ryan's talking about trading Laramie Tunsil. Said it was tough. It was not easy.
Trading Laramie is really tough. There's nothing easy about that because Laramie is such a great player. You know, you put the tape on Sunday. He's arguably one of the best one-on-one pass protectors in the NFL. So it's hard to lose a player of his caliber. But also at the same time, it was a trade we felt was beneficial to both parties. Well, we were able to get quality draft picks out of the trade, sent Laramie to a really good team as well. So I think we both benefited from the trade, but it's going to be hard to replace them as well. So in free agency, you see we've added a couple few offensive linemen, Cam Robinson, Trent Brown, Ed Ingram, Lakin Tomlinson. The idea behind adding those guys is just going to add some veteran guys who played for a while. They've done it the right way. Guys play hard. And really wanted to enhance just competition in the room.
All right, there's a ton of breadcrumbs there from D'Amico Ryans. One, put on the tape on Sunday, yeah, on Laramie Tunsil. I'm going to do that thing that radio hosts do, where I'm like, well, what about the other 6 days?
Yep. You can definitely reverse engineer that.
Yes.
Go the other way around.
Yes.
What about Wednesday?
Yeah. I checked that injury report.
Yeah.
The word rest is on there a lot on Wednesdays. Yeah,
what about Wednesday?
That was one. And number two, where D'Amico said it's going to be really hard to replace Laramie Tunsil, and in a vacuum, he's right. I mean, there's only a handful of guys that are better at left tackle than Laramie Tunsil. But, and D'Amico knows what I'm about to say, obviously, this is not about replacing Laramie Tunsil. This is about a complete overhaul of that room,
yep,
which Laramie Tunsil is a fraction of the replacement part. You know, you're physically replacing a few guys there for sure. I think it's an attitude and a coaching style that you're replacing as much as it is the actual human beings in the room.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's an attitude, it's a coaching style, and then on top of that, like, it's just the reality that having the one elite pass protector along the offensive line was not good enough to save you. It's not an individual type of position where, like, individual excellence means excellence for the whole group. Mm-hmm. Like, a wide receiver, for example. One wide receiver, great. And the whole wide receiver room can look good because you got that one great wide receiver, right?
Yeah.
Like, he can, a one wide receiver can make it up. But the offensive line is obviously playing in concert, playing together. And so the one being elite does not necessarily translate to the rest of them being elite or even being passable, which we've now seen basically 2 years in a row with Laramie Tunsil. So, like, I do wonder, it's water under the bridge now, but I do wonder, like, this thought exercise of, is this the move that the Texans make even if, say, they beat Kansas City in that divisional round?
Mm.
And everything is still true in terms of the business implications, the financial implications of keeping or getting rid of Laramie Tunsil, and also all of the other stuff, the ancillary stuff that we're talking about within the locker room or the attitude or the approach or how that affects the rest of the room. All of those things would have still been reality even,
yes,
if they had won that game. So, like, even if they get a step closer to their goal or have a, you know, empirically better season than they did the year before, is that still the tough business move that they make? I think that the answer is yes, but it's easy to look back and reflect on the year. They didn't necessarily take a step up, and the offensive line takes a step back. So we can call it toxic and we get rid of everybody and everybody's kind of just trying to do their own autopsy of the
It's
thing.
An interesting hypothetical that you pose there, Brandon.
I think the answer is yes, but it is interesting.
I undoubtedly think it's yes, because the fact of the matter is it would have meant in that Kansas City game you made a couple more plays that you didn't make in reality. Does that change the body of work throughout the course of the season and the entire postseason? It doesn't. Right. Other than a couple, not materially. It changes the outcome of a game, but it doesn't change play to play how that line played. Also, that would have meant you're going on to play another game in, it would have been Buffalo, right? You would have gone up to Buffalo and played an AFC title game where, let's face it, some bad things could have happened there that would have had you with the same thought. The only thing that probably changes the calculus on is to maybe get to or win a Super Bowl. Yeah. That's probably about it.
Yeah, if you get there and lose to Philly the way Kansas City did, then we're obviously looking at the season a lot differently.
Yeah, yeah.
But all of those things would have still been true. Like, let's say they win the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. right? Or let's just go Kansas City. They get to the Super Bowl, lose to the Eagles. Laremy Tunsil is still expensive, and they still have just drafted Blake Fisher, and they have another expensive tackle on the team.
Absolutely.
And all of these things are still true, but do we talk about them the same way? We probably do not, but a lot of these things are still true about the offensive line.
Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. You can text the show, 713-572-4610. The O-line teardown gets an A+, but the rebuild, as of right now, on paper, gets a D. And I think, here's the thing. We're not going to know what the grade should be for the rebuild until A, the draft, because that's going to be a big component of it. And B, and I understand that the sentiment of the texter, which is I am underwhelmed by the guys they've brought in so far.
Yeah, I've said something similar. I feel like that.
Yeah, and so I get that. It all depends on how easy or tough a grader you are.
Yeah.
And number two, until we see what it looks like with Nick Haley and Cole Popovich getting their hands into the clay, so to speak. You know, what does it look like with a different coaching staff compared to what it looked like with Bobby Slowick and Chris Strauser last year?
Yeah, I mean, they got rid of three offensive linemen, including their best one, who's far and away better than anybody that they already had and anybody that they've brought in. So, like, when you look at it just from a net positive or negative, they got rid of their best guy, didn't bring anybody in that we think is anywhere nearly as good as that. Nor did they, by the way, as of yet, at least, adequately or impressively address the holes. Like, nobody thought they had a hole at left tackle. As frustrated as you might be with Laremy Tunsil and his false starts and maybe his attitude or whatever you don't like about Laremy Tunsil, yeah, you probably didn't think, hey, the Texans don't have a left tackle. You did think they don't have a left guard. They don't have a right guard. We don't know what's going on with center because they drafted one and then benched him and got him playing guard. So, like, there are three interior positions we got serious questions about. I don't feel like we've got better answers or satisfactory answers to those. So I'm with the texter in spirit, but also, like, to be fair, it's probably an incomplete. That's not,
yeah,
like, the texter, I'll give him credit for having the hotter radio take of, hey, it's a D,
yeah,
and me on the radio saying it's actually probably an I, because no one wants to give an incomplete. But if, yeah, we're being fair about it, we still have to see what they're going to do and, like you said, what it's going to look like with the new coaching.
One more from D'Amico Ryans, as long as we're talking about the offense. He was asked about the acquisition of wide receiver Christian Kirk.
I love Christian's, just his speed. That's the one thing that jumps out about him. Is we need to trade. He's a fast player, right? He's made a lot of nice plays in the slot, running the deep routes in the slot, or it's the option routes of winning on third down. So I'm excited to see what he brings on third down. I think he can really, you know, open up a lot of options for us on third down, whether that's especially from the inside position. I think he'll be a friendly target for CJ.
Yeah. If they hadn't made the Christian Kirk trade, we would be talking, I think, more about wide receiver than the offensive line room right now.
Yeah.
And I still think a wide receiver opposite Nico, you know, Kirk's going to play the slot. I still think getting a guy on the outside, I think you can make an argument that individually is a bigger need than anything they've got going on the offensive line right now.
I think it's pretty big, but honestly, man, like, I've got more confidence, like, and call me crazy, audience, if you want, but I got more confidence right now in Xavier Hutchinson than I do, say, Ed Ingram.
Oh, like Lakin Tomlinson.
Or Lakin Tomlinson. And maybe Lakin Tomlinson I'm not as down on as I am Ed Ingram, because he actually has been good before.
Man.
Well, he's been good before. You know, yeah, and I'm not saying he's going to be good now necessarily, but there's I've at least seen it before. Ingram, not as much. He's just played a lot over his, you know, 3 years in the league
played
so far,
a lot,
but not necessarily well at any point. Laken Tomlinson has played well at some point in life.
Yeah.
So there's something to find there.
I
would say if you package those two, the guard position, and give me that versus what's your confidence in them versus Xavier Hutchinson, I think I'm more confident in Hutch.
Okay, you're more confident in Laken Tomlinson and Ed Ingram than you are Hutchinson and Mechie right now.
I think I'm more confident
in Hutch. You? Man, I just like...
That's not saying a lot, Sean.
I like him. You're right.
This is not a fun race to run.
We are debating three plates below the surface of the earth right now. Yes. But yeah, so... Yeah, I don't know. I just wish I'd seen Hutchinson and Mechie get open more, you know?
And also, to the Christian Kirk point, at least they also have Christian Kirk to kind of help offset some things.
Like
you do have now two, and I mentioned the difference between wide receiver and offensive line. Like, they're kind of doing their own individual thing. You do at least have two really good ones. One that's probably great, I would say, in Nico Collins. Mm-hmm. And Christian Kirk, we might not even talk enough about.
Yeah.
Because he's actually really, really good. I don't know if you have... Who's your really, really good offensive lineman? Who is...
Who's your best one right now? It's probably Cam Robinson's probably your best offensive lineman right now.
It's not a fun question to ask or answer.
That kind of hurt.
Yeah.
All right. Payne and Pendergast, Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne today. Headlines coming up next. The Astros, how concerned are we about the offense? We'll hear from Astros manager Joe Espada as the Astros lose 7-2 last night to the San Francisco Giants. Rockets lose to the Lakers. NFL league meetings today. Big things going on in West Palm Beach today. We'll get to all that in headlines coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
And that'll do it for the Astros on this Monday night. So the first night they wear the City Connect 2.0 uniforms, they manage just three hits offensively, drop the opener of this three-game series 7-2. The Giants improved to 3-1 on the season. The Astros even up at 2 games apiece.
Todd Callis on the call. The Astros lose last night 7-2. I don't know why he dragged the City Connect uniforms into that, Todd. It wasn't their fault that they left. The City Connect uniforms are pretty dope, man.
Yeah, that was the best thing they had going on.
They were all wearing them on the broadcast last night, too.
Yeah, they were all wearing them on the broadcast, so they look good. They lost in style, which, you know, for what it's worth. And man, these City Connect 2.0s, Sean, they've been a hit since opening day.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you saw that, man. Like, everybody was out there rocking them. Like, it seems like as soon as they went out on sale, Astros fans showed out in bulk and like just started buying those things. So they're a hit. The issue is right now is that the Astros cannot hit.
Like, man.
I don't get it. Like, why have they not ordered them some torpedo bats?
There's a solution sitting right there. It's the soon to be illegal torpedo bats.
Where are the torpedo bats at, man?
That's just me purely speculating. These bats, I didn't know they existed until, was it Saturday that the Yankees hit all those home runs?
Yeah, they went for like 20.
I was sitting
Saturday or Sunday.
I was sitting at a blackjack table in the sports book at the Golden Nugget.
Yeah.
As the Brewers, as Nestor Cortez, former Yankee, was giving up a home run each pitch, the first three pitches of the game. And I'm saying to my, my attention is divided, obviously, and I'm asking the dealer and the pit boss, I'm like, is that a replay? Or like, what's going on? Like, no, he just keeps giving up home runs.
Yeah.
That was wild. And so that was the first I'd ever learned of the torpedo bat. I didn't know it existed before that. Now it's a huge topic. It was the lead on Good Morning America yesterday, was this thing. Should they be using the torpedo bats, B. Scott?
It definitely sounds like cheating. Like, I'm not necessarily
Up our alley.
You know, bat expert necessarily.
We're known to be looking for those little edges out there.
Yeah, and this one feels like it's one that's like on the line, toeing the line, but not over the line.
Others are clearly doing it publicly.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get all the smoke.
Yeah, I think, you know, if it does turn out to be illegal, the Yankees get to be the ones on the forefront of said cheating scandal instead of the Astros this time.
Or Ellie De La Cruz. Ellie De La Cruz decided to use the torpedo bat.
And honestly, does someone as big as and strong as Ellie De La Cruz, or I don't know, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, do these guys feel like dudes that
Judge
should be?
Didn't use it, reportedly.
That's right. That's
Judge,
right.
Judge didn't use it. But De La Cruz, if you missed it, went, and we'll get back to the Astros, I promise, 4-for-5 with 2 bombs and 7 RBIs yesterday.
Yeah.
That feels like you just handed somebody a psychopath a nuclear weapon.
But I read this about him, Sean. Yeah. Like, and I think this was actually just Michael Kay speaking on the Yankees broadcast, just straight up, that one of their players hits the ball on the label almost every time. Yeah. Never could just never barrel it up. Like, always hit it on the label. And so the Yankees go out there and get more bats with barrels on the label.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, I don't know, man. That might be legal, but it definitely sounds like cheating. Like, the spirit of it feels like cheating.
So the genesis of this torpedo bat was one scrub from the Yankees who couldn't stop hitting it off the label.
That's the way Michael Kay told the story.
That's where the pandemic of the torpedo bat started.
I don't know, man. It seems kind of shady to me. In which case, why aren't we doing it again?
We'll see. Yeah, the Astros could use it anyway. So the Astros lose last night 7-2 to the New York Giants. New York Giants. I need a torpedo bat.
Yeah.
Torpedo tongue.
They used to be the New York Giants.
They did. Thank you.
A long time ago.
Yeah, they play the Brooklyn Dodgers next week. San Francisco Giants, 7-2. Joe Espada is in early 2024 mode right now when it comes to the hitting. Remember when they started 7-19 last year and poor Joe Espada would get trotted out there like, you know, I think Jose Abreu, you know, actually got to a 3-ball count in a couple of at-bats, you know. This is Joe Espada trying to put a spin on this offensive malaise the Astros are in right now.
Good. We hit some balls, you know, hard today. Pareda had a big double, obviously a big knock. Jose staying hot, getting some good at-bats. You know, I just thought today we ran into a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah, and Hicks was really good.
They did run into a pretty good pitcher. But look, I hope that this season
it's my least favorite Joe Espada.
Well, and this is what I'm going to speak to. I feel like this season we need to do a better job of embracing ultimate optimist Joe Espada.
Yeah, no, I will, because it was new to me last
year.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. It was new to you last year, and then things ended up kind of working out. They still won a division. Postseason was really disappointing. But I think by the end of it, we were good with Joe Espada and probably were accepting of his demeanor, his personality, probably respected a lot. So, like, we just need to be ready for glass half full Joe Espada.
Yeah, every day.
Yes.
Every day. 7-2 loss to the Giants, fourth game of the year. Hosey's still hot.
Yeah. Hosey's still hot. Three extra base hits.
Yeah.
Through the season, through four games in the season so far. It's okay.
We're good for the team, not Hosey.
Yeah, the whole team.
Yeah.
We're good.
Here's Joe Espada. Now, what they could use is some extra base hits from Yordan Alvarez, but Joe Espada is not worried about the big man.
Yeah. You know, like today, that when he just missed that breaking ball first pitch when he flew out to right, he was just off. And he's a matter of just a few more bats. He'll get there.
Yeah,
he'll get there soon.
This is where I agree with Joe Espada. This is where I'm going to go a little Espada myself here, B. Scott.
All right.
Of all the things I'm worried about with the Astros, Yordan Alvarez is the least of them.
Yes.
Individually, now, he needs to start hitting, because when he hits, there's no player whose performance is more tied to winning for the Astros. There's no player offensively who has a bigger delta in OPS between how they hit in wins and how they hit in losses than Yordan Alvarez. It's a startling split. And he's the one guy that has a transformative effect on those around him in the lineup, where, yep, you know, if you're pitching to Paredes at the two hole, you're pitching to Christian Walker in the, you know, like, if you're, he, his presence, his ability to get on base, his ability to hit with power, they affect everybody in the lineup.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about Yordan for the exact thing that Joe Espada just said, which is he's done this before. He's had stretches before, and then he usually comes out of these hitting like one of the best hitters in baseball.
No, he is one of the best hitters in baseball, arguably the best left-handed hitter in baseball, certainly top two or three, probably a top 5 to 6 hitter in baseball if you were to do some type of ranking and go league-wide. But also, like, I'd point this out, man. And like, one thing that I've been excited about coming into the season and remain excited about, despite the fact that they haven't really hit, is that the Kyle Tucker trade that brings in, obviously, Cam Smith, but also Isak Paredes, and that being their new two-hole hitter,
mm-hmm,
Isak Paredes specifically as the guy to set up Yordan Alvarez,
yeah,
to me was a brilliant move. Only really looks brilliant once Yordan starts hitting.
Yeah.
But like Isak Paredes, we now know we can expect for every at bat to be one where, like, if you need to go use the bathroom, you'll have time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
his sole job, and I know he got a knock last night, but his job is going to be to get the pitcher tired when he has to go and face Yordan Alvarez.
Yeah.
So now he's got to face Yordan Alvarez after having to deal with an 8-pitch, 10-pitch at bat with Isak Paredes. And so that is going to eventually look like a mastermind once Yordan starts doing his thing.
6-point game. Here comes Van Vliet. And good if it goes. It's over. The Lakers have won. And they go to 46-29. They've won 3 of 4.
All right, Rockets lose last night. Kevin Harlan on the call. They lose last night 104-98 to the Lakers. The Rockets remain a game and a half up on Denver for the 2 seed. They remain 2.5 up on the Lakers. So the Rockets, look, Oklahoma City is in a universe of their own right now. The, yeah, battle is for the 2 seed. The Rockets hold that lead right now. They're going to face the Lakers again. The issue for the Rockets, more than anything else, is two things. One, after this upcoming game against Utah, they finish the season with 5 games against playoff Western Conference playoff teams. OKC, Golden State, the 2 LA teams, and Denver. They don't have the tiebreaker with Denver. If they lose to the Lakers in the second to last game of the season, I'm guessing they won't have the tiebreaker with the Lakers either. I'm not sure exactly what the season record is.
I think that is correct.
I know they beat the Lakers earlier this year, but they lose last night. I'm not so much worried about Memphis and Golden State. Those teams are 4.5, 5 games back of the Rockets. I think the Rockets will do enough. Those teams are going to lose some games. It's really a 3-team battle for the 2 seed right now. And the Rockets, those are the only 2 losses they have over the last 3 weeks, are to those 2 teams.
Yeah, and
the big missed opportunity, B. Scott.
I think it's a big missed opportunity, but now that we're talking through it and you just kind of look at the math of it, it seems like we can feel pretty comfortable, absent of them like just falling completely off the face of the earth, and then, you know, one of these other teams getting hot and maybe winning all of their games. It seems like they're probably going to be the home team. Like, they're going to host a playoff series.
I think they're going to host a playoff
series. They're going to be the home team, either as the 4 in the 4-5, or, yep, the 3 in the 3-6, or the 2 in the 2-7.
That's the big takeaway, I guess, if we're just looking at ceiling and floor. Ceiling is that they win enough games to clinch the two seed.
And maintain this two, yeah.
Floor looks to be, barring a major collapse, and a major run by Memphis, by the way.
Right.
Or Golden State.
Or Golden State.
Or I guess Minnesota or the Clippers, but they're running out of time.
Memphis just fired their coach.
Yeah.
So they're going through things.
I think the floor on this is the four seed, which when they got off to the start they did, the Rockets, you know, they're about 50 games into the season, you could see they're a pretty good basketball team. I said, you know what? If they get a home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs, that's a huge success story this year.
Yeah.
Compared to where they've been the last few years.
Yeah, I mean,
now, winning a playoff series would be great.
I mean, my preseason projection was that they would be a play-in team and that the goal should be to be like an actual playoff team, so a top six seed. So they are out kicking my expectation by at least four whole seeds.
They're the quintessential team nobody wants to play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because they're just so unknown compared to some of these other commodities.
And I think that's also, like on the one end, they're the quintessential team that nobody wants to play, but they're also the team that nobody, like in terms of analysis or evaluation, actually knows what to do with.
Yeah.
Because, like, they're sitting their best player in crunch time last night in Jalen Green, who is their go-to guy at the end of a game. People don't really have a great answer to that question yet, and they're going to find out pretty soon.
They will. They will. Playoffs will be here soon enough. It'd be fun having playoff basketball back, man. It's going to be good.
I have been just like joyful about it for like 2 months when I realized, like, you know what? This Rockets thing is for real.
May basketball.
We are going to have May basketball at Toyota Center. I cannot wait.
It should be fun, man. All right. We're also going to have a Final Four coming up this weekend. You have not gotten to sink your teeth into the Cougs yet.
Man.
I want to allow you that opportunity. Where would knocking off Duke rank on the vanquishing a hated opponent scale, especially considering they knocked the Cougs out last year?
Yeah.
I've got a comp for it. I want to see what you think of it. Brandon Scott in for Seth Payne. We'll do that coming up next.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.